And this afternoon, it is my honor to introduce Meg Freiling, who's the Associate Director for Client Support Messaging and Collaboration Services at the University of Albany SUNY. Her topic today is TCO and Perceived Success of ERP Software, Simulating a Dynamic Feedback Perspective.
Thank you, Beth, and thank you for coming to an afternoon session. I know your bellies are full now and you're ready to take a nap, so hopefully I can try and keep it interesting. If not interesting, I can get you annoyed about how much it costs you to maintain your ERP systems if you're not annoyed already. You may be wondering, Beth introduced me and said that I work for Client Support Services now, and I started that job actually in January, but up until then, I worked in our University Applications Development Department, which and I was there for 12 years, and we maintained our ERP system, which is PeopleSoft. So I'm essentially talking about that work today. If you want to email me, if you have any questions after the session, or you're interested in maybe pursuing some research with me, then please email me. And there's the, for you tweeters, there's the session hashtag. So this is really research work, so it'll seem a little bit different maybe than other sessions, but I've tried to make it not too academic, but hopefully practitioner-based for you. So essentially, I'm going to talk about case study, and it is the University at Albany, and I'll tell you how I conducted that research and some findings and some hopefully future directions that I want to go. So why is it something that I wanted to research? Well, working with ERP, and how many of you work with ERP? I assume since you're here, you do, or you're just here to heckle. And what problems do we have? Well, we spend a lot of our resources on our ERP system. It's kind of one of those necessary evils, but a lot of our IT resources, and in fact, some colleagues and I were chatting about this last night, that a huge chunk of our IT resources are dedicated to our ERP system. And, yes, we're in an economic crisis, so we're told do more with less, stretch those resources, and we need to find ways to do that. Of course, we always underestimate how long something's going to take and how much resources it's going to consume, but I'm actually looking at not just that initial implementation of an ERP, but long-term how many resources is my ERP system going to tie up. And we always have this struggle of business process reengineering versus customization. And we all have good intentions when we get our ERP, or I hope we do, that we're told you really need to change your business practices to fit the system. It's built on best practices, blah, blah, blah. And we have really, really good intentions to do that. And then our users just beat on us relentlessly. And they can't help it. It's not that they don't love us, but it's just the nature of the beast that people are comfortable with what they know. We already know this. But that's not just an implementation issue. It doesn't only cause us to slip our timeline and extend our scope and have additional costs, but it really impacts us long term when we're maintaining that ERP. So we don't really have our implementation decisions are often based on short-term goals. Well, I want to implement on time, and I want to be within a certain budget. Of course, they tend to slip. Most of them do. But those are the goals that we tend to look at instead of what long-term effect is that going to have. We might think about it a little bit, but we're really focused on those short-term goals. So we have a hard time predicting what is that long-term impact going to be based on the decisions that I make during implementation. And, of course, we have this shift of our homegrown system. We went and talked to our users, and we said, tell us what you want, and we're going to build it exactly the way that you want it. And ERP is not that type of world anymore. So some of my questions were, how can we better predict what that long-term cost is going to be? How can we improve that, as well as perceptions of success? So there's kind of this balance of cost versus people being happy, right? So how do we find the right balance there? And how can we, what is the impact of customizations versus business process reengineering? Not only on cost, but making our customers happy. The methodology that I used, I did interview people, and I'll talk a little bit about that, but it's called system dynamics, and it's a way of looking at complex problems, and it's frequently used in policy analysis to say, I can take a scenario, I can model it with a computer, and I can do my base case, which is calibrated to, in this case, the case study data. And then I can run different simulations, and I can say, what if I had made a different decision? How would the outcome look? So it's a way of looking at complex problems. And this just kind of gives you an idea of, this is called a feedback loop, and in system dynamics, we build these. And this is just an example of what that would look like in a pre-implementation environment. So as we as our time to implement that ERP slips, our likelihood of going through bundles and or upgrades increases, right? So we're plugging along, we're going to implement in a year, and then that starts to slip. And I know for us, our timeline slipped quite a bit, and we actually had to go through a major upgrade. So what happens when you have to do that? You have to stop everything you're doing. Well, maybe not everything, but you kind of put a pause button on, and you say, oh, great, now we have to go into this other environment, and we have to review everything that we did already to make sure it's compatible with the bundle or the upgrade. So, of course, that extra work is going to then cause us to need more time. So you have this feedback relationship that just kind of keeps spiraling into a bit of a nightmare. So what's the dynamic behavior we're considering in the model? This fact that we have to keep reapplying customizations, not only during the implementation part, but forever, right? As long as that customization exists, every time you get a bundle, and particularly an upgrade, you're going to have to go back and look at those customizations and reevaluate them and possibly redo them. So that cost of the customization as well as add-ons increases indefinitely. It never levels off unless you completely eliminate the customization. We have a user expectation. Once we've developed a customization or an add-on, good luck getting rid of it. So sometimes we say, you know, we just have to get through this implementation. Let's just do it. We don't really want to do the customization, or we don't think we need to do the add-on. We think maybe there's another way to do it with maybe policy change, but policy change takes time, right? So sometimes we say, all right, we'll just do the customization. We'll do the add-on, and we'll reevaluate it down the line. But that's really hard. You've set an expectation for people. And then you can also what I call the political slippery slope, where for the registrar's office, I did a customization. Then financial aid comes and says, I have to have this the way that it always worked before. You're going to have to change the product to make it work. It gets harder and harder to say no. Not only for a different office, but for the same office. Well, you did it for this other thing. Why not for that? So once you start to go down that road, it can get difficult to stop it. Mind you, I'm not saying you can go do a vanilla implementation, because I don't really think that's possible. And, of course, customizations break delivered software. And then what happens when you call the vendor and say something's broken? You customized it. Sorry, you're on your own. So we have this domino effect where it can kind of trickle into other things. You don't know why it's behaving the way it is. You contact the vendor and they say, sorry, you're on your own. You customized it. Of course, for an upgrade preparation, it's going to take that much longer. Tasks are done multiple times. There's a lot of rework. And this occurs both during your implementation and after implementation in the maintenance phase. Resources get tied up doing upgrade work. So you had your original scope for your project. This is pre-implementation. Your timeline has slipped. You have to go through some bundles. You might have to go through an upgrade. Meanwhile, customers are still asking for other things, and that those tasks are backlogging. So when I thought about what is my hypothesis of business process reengineering versus customizing, I said, okay, in my mind, business process reengineering has a higher upfront cost. It's going to take some time to talk to people, to get them to come around with, for IT staff to understand what the business offices are doing and for the business offices to get used to the software. So that takes a long time, and it takes time, and God forbid you have to make a policy change. That's going to take a long time too. So it kind of has this upfront cost, whether it's money or time or resources. But once you've done it, it levels off. So it's really painful in the beginning, but then once you get through it, time heals all wounds and you move on. While on the other hand, a customization, it may or may not take you, and some of the people that I interviewed with said, customization isn't necessarily fast or upfront. It depends on the customization. But we know that forever you're going to have to maintain it, unless you can reevaluate and get rid of it. But again, that's difficult. So it just keeps going. So how did I build my system dynamics model? I did look at academic literature as well as some practitioner literature. My personal experience on ERP, and then of course my case study data. So I came up with model constructs from the literature, from the case study data, calibrated it to how many times did we redo a task? How many tasks did we have? What kind of money did we spend? And then I went and I talked to technical project leads and functional project leads. I tried to get people that were there both for the implementation and for the upgrade, assuming they were still around, as well as I talked to folks at, I think, three other institutions. So the case study institution is the University at Albany. Just a little background, established in 1844, we are a research center, and we have 13,000 undergrads, 5,000 grads, and about 5,000, a little over 5,000 employees. The data sources, again, I interviewed, we had task management software that I was able to go in and see how many tasks did we have, how many times did we redo a task, that kind of information. My time boundary was 2003 to 2009, which spanned, we were implemented through student records in 2003, so I'd say we were about 75-80% implemented, and then through 2009 was through a major upgrade. It is PeopleSoft, and it was upgraded to 9. So it's primarily focusing on that post-implementation maintenance phase. And this just kind of gives you an idea of the outline, the milestones of the project. I think we purchased PeopleSoft in 97. And actually, I do kind of find this funny. We purchased it, not totally, but we thought it would be a Y2K solution as well. So I know the original implementation plan was we purchased it in 97. We thought we'd be totally live before 2000, which obviously didn't happen. And I don't mean to pick on University at Albany. I'm sure we're not the only ones that our timeline slipped. I will also say that a lot of institutions have implementation partners, so they have a consultant that comes in and works with them through the whole process. We did not do that. A decision was made that it was just the cost was just too much. I think it, at the time, so in 97, it was like $7 to $10 million for an implementation partner, and administration said that's just too much money. So what part of what caused the timeline to slip was it was totally done in-house. So we had an upgrade in 2002 as we're getting ready to go live with student records, which was probably the biggest piece. We had to, that part I was talking about where we had to kind of take a pause and redo a lot of the work, and then we went live, and then we had a major upgrade again in 2008. So if you go back to the project charter, and I'm sure it's probably not too much different than other people's, we said, okay, we know ERPs, we should be changing our business practices, changing policy when needed. We should be keeping customizations to a minimum, and we should make every effort to reduce costs. But again, when we thought about costs, did we just think about that initial implementation? It's hard to wrap your brain around what is it really costing me to maintain it. So if I look at the data, and this is for this I only had data from March 07 to May 09. This tells you the percentage of tasks each month that we worked on that were rework tasks. So that means someone, either we discovered it or someone submitting something to the help desk saying, this piece is not working. It could be something delivered. It could be something we wrote. So that's pretty, even at the lowest point, let's see, November-ish 07, still 59, 60% of our tasks are rework. We're not doing anything new. No new value added. And then the dotted lines are actually when bundles were applied, and the dark solid line is when the upgrade occurred. This is tasks opened every month. So the red line is rework again. So this is just numbers instead of percentage. And the dotted line is other tasks. So the dotted line is new tasks as well as upgrade tasks or bundle tasks. And again, the dotted lines are when bundles were applied in the solid line. Obviously, that huge jump is when we did the upgrade. And then this just kind of gives you a comparison of during the time that we were preparing for the upgrade. So you spend a long time. It's not like it's a couple months preparing for the upgrade. For us, it was about a year. And you're shifting those resources, right, to work on upgrade tasks. Meanwhile, new requests are getting put on the back burner. So where did we spend our time? 52% of our time was spent on add-ons. And that actually surprised me a little bit. I thought it would be customizations. So one of the things that I learned from this was, okay, add-on, it's not just customize. I mean, my definition of customizing is going into the code that they delivered and modifying that. I know some people consider add-ons customization, but I should have said that at the beginning. My definition is going into their delivered code and modifying it. To me, an add-on wasn't quite as intrusive. But we ended up spending 52% of our time on upgrade tasks, specifically on add-ons. Customizations were 18%. The delivered are things like someone says, I don't think this is working, and we spend time looking at it, and it actually is working, but it's a matter of figuring it out. So that's what the 12% delivered means. This gives a breakdown of what was the effort for each type of task. So 70% of the tasks were low effort, meaning a week or less. High effort, I think I had over a month, and then medium was in between. So most of our tasks are low effort, it's just we have a lot of them. Of the high effort tasks, certainly customizations take the biggest chunk. They tend to be high effort tasks. They take a long time. Then this was actually just before we started preparing for our upgrade. We had, and I'm sure we're not the only, I'm hoping we're not the only institution that has experienced this, where even though we've implemented this ERP, we've been up for a couple years, and functional offices are saying, it used to take me, in the legacy system, it took me one click to add an applicant, and now it takes me 500 clicks, and I hate IT. No, I don't know. PeopleSoft sucks. So why would you implement, and you can completely understand from their point of view, why would you implement a system that before I could get those data entry people, they're fast. They could get those applications in. Now it's 10 clicks. So we said, okay, there's still things going on in the functional offices. We're not meeting folks' needs. So we hired Oracle to come in and as consultants and talk to the functional offices and see what's going on, why are they, where are their major pain points. So the result of that analysis was, this is some of the information from that analysis, and they said, okay, our unmet needs, 28% of them are that we're not using, there's functionality there that we're not using. We don't know about it. We don't know how to use it. So some of our, and that pool is potential, in my mind, customizations are add-ons, right? Or you go to another system. You have a satellite system. So 28% are that. Of course, they did also say 17%. If you customized, of course, from one side of the mouth, they say don't customize. It's best practices. But then as a consultant, they came in and said 17% could be solved with customization. But 28% unused functionality, 16% if you re-engineer your business practices, 16% was upgrade. So this was just before we upgraded to 9, right? So they said, okay, 16% of your problems are going to be solved from doing the upgrade. But I think 28% is a pretty big percentage that we're just not using the system as we should. And where do our costs fall? This is actually, I had a few more years of data for this, 1998 through 2006. Employee salaries are the biggest chunk. So those folks that we've dedicated to working on the ERP indefinitely, that are doing all that rework that we can't really shift to anything else in the organization, that's what's costing us the most money. Of course, we have software maintenance costs, which always gets a lot of attention, right? Because the vendor keeps increasing the software costs. And maybe you can negotiate that, but your employees, that's what's costing you the most money. So I built the model on this information. Then I went and I actually interviewed the folks that I mentioned, functional project leads and technical project leads, as well as a couple people on the executive level. And we did semi-structured interviews. I had actual diagrams of the model that I would show them, and I would kind of tell a story with it and say, this is it, and it's not, the story isn't fact, it's the hypothesis. And I'd say, okay, is this what you're experiencing? Does this make sense? So then we would kind of talk about that piece of the model, see if they agreed or disagreed or had a similar experience or something different. And then I had follow-up Likert scale questions which kind of drew out pieces of the model, and they'd say, yes, I agree. You know, to which level do I agree or disagree with that piece of the model? As well as some open-ended questions. And this is what those pieces of the model looked like that I talked to folks about. And I'm not showing you the entire model here because otherwise you'd really hate me. But this, although I'm willing to share it if that's your thing. So this is that slippery slope customizations piece where I said to folks, is this what you experience, that the more customizations we have, the more that we want? It's almost like a drug habit, right? And I do have some citations there. So some of this came from, some of it was, my hypotheses, but it did come from literature as well. The system exposure and time available to reevaluate customizations, there were pieces that I added to the model after the interview that folks said, you know what, it's not just training, it's actually sitting on the system and using it is what makes me say, yeah, I really can maybe use some of the delivered functionality and not need the customization. So we tend to, there's certainly a lot of research about training and how important training is, and it is. But one of the things that almost every interviewee said, it's the time on the system. Because when you go to anyone that's been for ERP training, it's totally generic. You go in, I'll pick on PeopleSoft, they use PeopleSoft University. It's not configured to anything the way your institution is, and it's really hard to wrap your brain around, how am I going to do my job based on just the training? So it's really being on the system and doing your job on the system that makes the difference. Again, system exposure came in. My ability to understand the functionality in the system is partially helped by training, but also by actually using the system and having time to do that. So the folks that you're saying, come on, we're putting in the IT is dedicated to the ERP ERP implementation, but you're stealing people from the functional offices and saying, okay, on top of all the other stuff you're doing, we're going to need you to care about this ERP. And we were able to get some people that were dedicated to the project from the functional offices, but a lot of other people, it's in addition to everything else that they're doing. So for them to have time to sit and use the system in a real way is very difficult unless you're able to pull them off their current job, which, again, in this, these economic times is not easy. So as they, if they're able to get that system exposure and really use the system in the way that they do that their job, they'll gain that understanding, they can explore it a little bit, and they slowly can start to see that, yeah, this could actually work. I can do my job on this. It's not so bad. And that attachment to the legacy systems does ease with system exposure to the new system. Of course, no big surprise, the more that we were able to work together and talk about the system, improves our, this is probably less cost, but more satisfaction and accepting the system. So these are the softer variables of the model. The dotted lines are the concepts in the model that when I talked to interviewees, they said, I'm not so sure I agree with that. So they came out of the literature for the most part. I have some citations there. But the folks I talked to said, I don't know if business process reengineering really makes me more productive. I mean, I know you say it's best practices, but I'm not so sure that's true. They didn't necessarily agree that business process reengineering has a higher upfront cost, and I mentioned that earlier. So the part of the model that still needs more research, well, probably all needs more research, but that was really, really fuzzy was how do we perceive that the ERP is successful? Probably for the initial implementation, we say, oh, man, we just managed to get the thing up, and no one's dead. And usually it's late. Usually it's over budget. If we manage to get it on time and under budget, then we think it's great. So, and certainly everyone that I talked to said, it depends who you are. If you're the clerk that now has 40 clicks to do their job instead of one, you probably don't think it's all that successful. If you're the CIO and you were under budget, maybe you do. So it really does depend, no big surprise, what lens you're looking through. Oh, and the other thing was that recurring cost to maintain customizations, a lot of the functional leads of the project, when I talked to them, they said, we get it, but most of the users are not going to care what it costs IT to maintain those customizations. I mean, they're not even going to wrap their brain around it, really. It's kind of doesn't mean anything. But it's like, that's not my problem. And again, I can't really blame them. So as far as that impacting success, for the most part, in the functional community, that doesn't matter. So as I mentioned at the beginning, what the model allows you to do is I could do what I call the base run, which is calibrated with the real data from what happened. And then you can try different scenarios. So I could say, okay, what if I increase the mentoring of my IT staff? Or what if we said we're doing a totally vanilla implementation, no customizations, no add-ons? How would that impact cost and perceptions of success? Or if I could say, we don't have to, this is the beauty of a model, right? It doesn't have to be the real world. What if there were no bundles or no upgrades? How would that impact things over time? What if I could get the vendor to be more responsive to my request for enhancements? So a lot of our customizations or add-ons are because there's something, sometimes we just don't realize there's functionality there, but sometimes there really is something lacking that we need. So we go back to the vendor and we say, please add this particular functionality. And what do they say? We'll put it on the list, and maybe if there's enough people that want it, maybe someday we'll get to it. So if we were able to magically just establish this really wonderful relationship where everything we asked for, they did, how would that impact things over time? What if we could increase training? And what if we had added an implementation partner? So as I said at the beginning, we did not do that. We chose to do everything in-house. We did get some consulting, very minimal here and there, but for the most part, it was done in-house. So this just kind of gives you an example when I run the model, what the output looks like. And this is a number of rework tasks over time. And it starts at the 2003 point. So the spike here is at the upgrade. And the red line is the pace. So that's the case study data, how many tasks we actually had. If we could eliminate, if we didn't do any customizations and no add-ons, obviously things drop quite a bit. We still have rework. It doesn't eliminate it, but it reduces it quite a bit. If we could eliminate bundles and upgrades, it did help a little bit too. Now, the problem here is if we have no customizations and no add-ons, IT's happy. A lot less work for us. We can, you know, take a coffee break. Who's unhappy? The users hate us. So they're going to have to do so. So what isn't taken into consideration that I want to point out is the cost on the functional offices. So perhaps I have all these other workarounds that I have to do because you didn't modify the system. Same thing here. Yeah, I can eliminate bundles and upgrades. I could go unsupported, right? I could just say, PeopleSoft or whatever vendor I'm using, thanks, but no thanks, I'm going to go unsupported. So what isn't reflected here is I might have to go to a third-party vendor and there'd be a cost involved to do regulatory releases and that kind of thing. So it helps, but what we don't know yet is what other impact would that have. So what are... I just wanted to give you a couple numbers as far as total cost. So the simulation was a 5.5-year period, so it was that 2003 through the upgrade, and increasing mentoring of our IT staff dropped rework just for that time period $1 million. Dropping customizations and add-ons dropped $2 million, but we don't know what the functional impact would be. No bundles and no upgrades is a $1 million drop in rework. But again, do we need third-party support? How would we support that in-house if we had to? Being able to build a better relationship with the vendor to get them to do all of our enhancements actually didn't help in the simulation. Because it ends up taking so long for them to get us the enhancement that usually we still have to do the customization temporarily or the add-on temporarily. So it didn't make enough of a difference to be what I would consider a good policy. Training did not have as much of an impact as I thought it would, but going back and looking at the interviews, it's probably that, again, that system exposure, actually using the system, that would help the most. Adding an implementation partner, of course, as I told you, it was $7 to $10 million investment. So it does drive up the total cost of ownership quite a bit, about $7 million. But the rework drops quite a bit because what I took into consideration in the model are things like that 28% unused functionality. I figured, okay, if we had an implementation partner, at least theoretically, they should hopefully know about some of that and be able to also help us with business process reengineering. So what are the implications for practitioners when we're making a decision about ERP? Well, maybe we think we don't have a choice, right? Everybody's doing it. All the cool kids are doing it. But are there other options? I mean, there really is a long-term cost. We're on the merry-go-round now, right? And once you're there, it's maybe not impossible, but difficult to get off. So should we take that into consideration when making this investment decision? Are there other options out there? Training versus system exposure. So we tend to to say, we throw money at training, but is that really doing the trick? Is that really helping us as much as we thought it was? Benefits of staff turnover. So we tend to think, oh my gosh, I hope we don't lose the critical people in the functional offices that know the existing business practices really well. But I actually had functional people say, it's good when they leave because they're attached to the old system. And so now the new system comes in, people have no history with it, and they'll just run with it. They don't have all this preconceived idea of how things have to go. And I don't mean to pick on those functional people because I love them dearly, and I get attached to things as well. But it's just hard to take your mind out of the way you've always done things. So it was funny that it wasn't the technical people. It was actually those functional offices that said sometimes it helps for people to move on. Another thing that came out was that the pie graph that we saw earlier was the cost of add-ons. If I take only customizations out of the run, it doesn't help that much. The add-ons really have a significant cost, even though we're not directly modifying the delivered code. And why is that? Well, they still make database changes and things like that, that you still have to go back and touch those add-ons. We need to think about in the beginning we think about how are people going to accept the system and how do we measure success, but we need to think about long term. You know, it's going to be hard in the beginning, but if we can get over the hump at kind of going back to that initial investment in being able to change things, maybe we spend a little more time implementing so that we can institute business process reengineering and so we can do policy changes. And we don't have that pressure of you need to have it implemented by a certain time where we're just looking at that short-term goal. And maybe we could do a better job, spend a little more time up front, and it'll save us in the long term. And then we have our policy analysis, which I just talked about with the different runs, where we can say, okay, what if we did X? How would that look over time? 10 minutes? Oh, perfect. So what would I like, if anyone is just loves this topic and would love to explore it, I mean, we could try it with your institution, try the model, calibrate it, see how it behaves. I did review the model structure with experts, but I didn't review the model behavior, so what actually happens when I run it. So that's one of the things that I'd like to do. Does it make sense to experts in the field of how the model behaves? Love to calibrate it with other institutions. It would be nice to get that functional perspective. So as I mentioned earlier, this is really looking at the IT perspective. What are the implications for the functional offices? Could it be used as a project management tool? So there's folks in the system dynamics field, Cooper and Lee, that have saved corporations a lot of money creating a project management tool. Floor Corporation, I know it's in the millions of dollars that they supposedly have saved the corporation. They actually have a system dynamics model that they run every project through to see what's it going to cost us and make decisions on their project based on that. So that's pretty cool. It could also be used in a business school test bed. Some of the well-known system dynamics games are the beer game. I just like the title of it, and Stratagem. The beer game is based on supply chain management and what happens. So you actually play the game to understand what happens in supply chain management. And Stratagem is just a understanding, very similar. What do my business decisions up front, how do they impact things down the line? Exploring more of that training versus system exposure. Delay and rework discovery. So what that means is in the model, I had just a standard, it takes a certain number of months to discover that something's broken and we need to fix it. As we know, in the academic world, things don't happen in months, right? They happen in terms. It's the fall term. It's the spring term. So what we would see, and if I went back and looked at the graphs, you would sometimes see a bundle dotted line, and you would not see rework spike until a couple months later. And my hypothesis on that is, like, one was in July. And then in September, all of a sudden the rework spiked because nobody actually noticed anything was broken until, and we, of course, you guys probably do it too. You send out emails and you say, please test, the bundle's been applied. Please test it. You have a month. And it's not that, you know, people probably do some, but again, it's that training versus exposure. Until I actually use the system and do my real job with it, I don't notice that something strange is going on. So you would see kind of different types of delays that isn't really built into the model right now. Could it be used as a sales tool? I don't know. Maybe a third-party support vendor could say, this is why you don't want to be on vendor the ERP vendor support. This is why you want our support. And I'd like to look more into that success piece, the piece that was kind of hard to get a grasp on. In the future, it'd be nice to look at that a little bit more. So I think we have a couple minutes maybe for questions. If it is something that interests you, I do have an article that's going to be published, I think the end of this month or next month, and it has some more, you'll see these same things, but it has some more details. And the PowerPoints are on the EDUCAUSE website if you're interested. Thoughts, questions?
You mentioned that customization breeds customization. Is that what Dave showed? That it tends to define itself.
The data, the quantitative data, I didn't have quantitative data on that. It was really just the talking to folks, and people seemed to agree with that, that they felt that that was true. I have not used it yet. I actually just finished this research in May. And of course I've switched jobs, so now I'm in client support. I'm not really in that role anymore, but it is something I would love to do. It's hard to separate it. I tried to, if it was a new requirement, fortunately, when we were developing our task tracking software, configuring it, I already had this research in mind. So I was very self-serving, and I put fields in the task tracking to kind of attempt to tease out what was really a bug versus someone just request something, policy has changed and they're trying to do something differently. But I'm sure I'm sure it's not perfect. So, rework is meant to be something that actually has broken. It could be, something that's broken, bugs. It could be delivered functionality that has a bug. It's not necessarily ours. Well, thank you very much for coming.